It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
President Obama says U.S. may see more Ebola cases and Syrian Kurds getting help from rebels and Iraqi Kurds in Kobani. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. President Barack Obama says the United States may continue to see individual cases of Ebola until the outbreak in West Africa is contained. At the White House Wednesday, Mr. Obama honored U.S. health workers who have returned from West Africa and those planning to go.
They do this for no other reason than their own sense of duty, their sense of purpose, their sense of serving a cause greater than themselves. So we need to call them what they are, which is American heroes. They deserve our gratitude, and they deserve to be treated with dignity and with respect.
Mr. Obama said they make him confident that Ebola will be contained and snuffed out, saying U.S. efforts are already making a difference. Witnesses say Boko Haram militants have taken over a city in northeastern Nigeria, again defying a ceasefire declared by the government earlier this month. Local residents tell VOA that the militants stormed the city of Mumbai today, pillaging the local emir's palace and releasing jailed militants from a prison. The Nigerian Air Force is reported to have launched airstrikes to counter the Boko Haram advance. Kurdish fighters in northern Syria are getting reinforcements in their weeks-old battle with Islamic State militants in the town of Kobani. A group of about 50 rebels from the Free Syrian Army arrived Wednesday in Kobani after crossing into Syria from Turkey. They joined the fight there against the Islamic State group after spending the past 3.5 years battling Syrian forces in a bid to oust the president, Bashar al-Assad. This is VOA News. Egypt has begun evacuating hundreds of families from their homes along its border with the Gaza Strip as authorities try to stop terrorist operations they believe are originating in the Palestinian territory via tunnels under the border. Edward Uranian has the story from Cairo.
Al Jazeera TV showed live webcam footage of a bulldozer knocking down a cement and cinder block building in the northern Sinai border town of Rafah. The report said Egyptian authorities had ordered 600 families in one area of Rafah to leave their homes. Egyptian media report that local army commanders spoke with affected residents, giving them 48 hours to remove their belongings. Egypt declared a state of emergency in the northern Sinai following a terrorist attack last Thursday that killed more than 30 Egyptian soldiers. Edward Uranian, Cairo.
The U.S. State Department says a comment made by an unnamed administration official criticizing Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu were inappropriate and counterproductive. State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki says U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry feels strongly that a war of words is not productive from either side.
Obviously, we believe that moving forward, it's in the best interest of both sides to address any issues that may arise appropriately and respectfully and not through personal attack.
Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu says personal attacks against him by the United States are a result of his defending Israel and its national security interest. Ukraine's Interior Minister Arsen Avakov says 91 people in positions of leadership have been fired from the ministry, including 8 generals found to have links to past pro-Russian governments. Avakov, writing Wednesday on Facebook, said the dismissals targeted department heads, including the ministry's regional directorates in Kiev and Donetsk. In Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants beat the Kansas City Royals 3-2 to win Game 7 of the World Series. This is the Giants' third World Series championship in just 5 years. The U.S. Central Bank has ended an effort to stimulate the economy by purchasing billions of dollars worth of bonds each month. Wednesday's announcement by the Federal Reserve ended a program called quantitative easing. It was intended to cut long-term interest rates on things like mortgages to encourage economic growth. The Fed's experts say the economy is improving and no longer needs that much assistance. And a 50-meter-wide river of lava has crossed one residential property, now headed for the main road in a seaside town on the U.S. island of Hawaii. From Washington, I'm Bill Michaels, and this is VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The World Health Organization says Ebola may be on the decline in Liberia.
So far, based on the information received today, it appears that the trend is real in Liberia, and there may indeed be a slowing of the epidemic there.
Bruce Awor is Assistant Director General of the World Health Organization. President Barack Obama has met with U.S. healthcare workers who have been working in West Africa. Ebola posed a new wrinkle in plans by Liberians in Ghana to return home. And is Zambia stable enough to withstand the death of another president?
We don't see any major challenges cropping up in terms of the fight for succession within the ruling party between now and the barrier, the official barrier of the president. It's what happens after that.
Ruben Lefuka is the head of Transparency International in Zambia. Sudan's information minister says President Bashir deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. And today, Thursday, is a day of reckoning in Burkina Faso. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A senior official at the World Health Organization says the number of newly reported cases of Ebola in the worst affected country, Liberia, is beginning to decline. Latest WHO estimates show more than 13,700 reported cases in all Ebola affected countries and more than 4,500 deaths. Liberia has the largest number of cases with 6,535 reported. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
After months of near futile battle with Ebola, a glimmer of hope is beginning to emerge in the worst affected country, Liberia. WHO Assistant Director General Bruce Aylward says he is cautiously optimistic that the tide may be turning. He says the Liberian government is mounting a multi-pronged investigation to determine whether the decline in Ebola cases is real.
So far, based on the information received today, it appears that the trend is real in Liberia, and there may indeed be a slowing of the epidemic there. The government, again, is looking at that information and will come out, I believe, more definitively in the coming days. The big concern, of course, is that that information would be attributed to the wrong factors, number one, and then misunderstood in terms of the implications for getting the job finished here.
Liberia has been struggling to get this deadly disease under control for several months. Dr. Aylward says it is likely that some of the measures the government and aid agencies have been pushing are beginning to bear fruit. He says there has been a huge effort to inform the population about how Ebola is transmitted in order to get people to change the behaviors that are putting them at risk. Most notably, he says, safe burial practices are being more widely adopted. Dr. Aylward says progress is being made in trying to build up clinical care and treatment capacity. While some positive movements can be seen, Dr. Aylward warns the Ebola epidemic is far from over.
To the question of, you know, am I hopeful? I'm terrified, you know, that the information would be misinterpreted and that people would start to think, oh, great, this is under control. Ebola is, that's like saying, your pet tiger is under control or something. This is a very, very dangerous disease. Any transmission chains in any area can rapidly result through a couple of dangerous events in many, many more cases.
The WHO Assistant Director General says there is increasing evidence that Ebola-affected countries can get on top of this disease and can turn the trends around. But he adds, they need further help to succeed. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
President Barack Obama says the United States cannot seal itself off from Ebola. The U.S. leader made the comments on Wednesday, flanked by American healthcare workers who have been on the front lines of the battle against the deadly disease in West Africa. VOA's Arul Pandey has more from the White House.
Dr. Kent Brantley was the first American with Ebola to be successfully treated in the United States. On Wednesday, Brantley, who contracted Ebola while caring for patients in Liberia, said the struggle to stem the outbreak in West Africa is far from over.
More medical personnel are desperately needed. At this time, perhaps more than any other, we feel the impact of our position as citizens of not only the United States of America, but as citizens of the world.
Standing alongside fellow healthcare workers at the White House Wednesday, Brantley introduced President Obama, who lauded their contributions in the fight against Ebola. Amid all the talk and controversy surrounding quarantining those who are returning from West Africa, Mr. Obama made clear his appreciation for American medical professionals leading efforts to stem the disease thousands of kilometers away.
A lot of people talk about American exceptionalism. I'm a firm believer in American exceptionalism. You know why I am? It's because of folks like this. It's because we don't run and hide when there's a problem.
President Obama said U.S. efforts in West African countries are making a difference, with critical infrastructure cutting Ebola testing times and safe burial practices doubling in places like the Liberian capital, Monrovia. The American leader, however, also made clear that affected nations face a long, hard battle to stem the severe outbreak and that the United States must continue to fight Ebola at its source.
Until we stop this outbreak in West Africa, we may continue to see individual cases in America in the weeks and months ahead, because that's the nature of today's world. We can't hermetically seal ourselves off.
The president's remarks came as the World Health Organization said the rate of new Ebola infections in Liberia appeared to be on the decline. Still, with nearly 5,000 people dead and the number of cases likely underreported, UN health officials caution the crisis is far from over. Aru Pandey, VOA News, The White House.
Refugees from Liberia's civil wars living in camp outside of Ghana's capital, Accra, say they are eager to return home, but they lack the money to do so. Now, there's another problem, Ebola, and the closed roads and canceled flights that have kept Liberians who have spent years abroad from returning. Chris Stein reports from Bujumbura in Ghana.
Amos Boy fled Liberia 12 years ago as fighting engulfed the country. He wants to go back, but missed the organized repatriations carried out by the United Nations. He doesn't have the money to travel. But with Ebola killing more than 2,400 people across Liberia, he now knows that he might have to wait longer.
Right now, there's no flight that's going, and there's no road, no border open from Ghana to Liberia now. So before you get to Liberia, maybe it'll be a lot of means. I don't want to risk my life passing so many eras, illegal eras. Yeah, so I decided to wait.
The Bujumbura refugee camp outside of Accra is now quieter than it once was. Many of the Liberians who fled to Ghana have returned home over the years, particularly after Liberians lost their status as refugees in 2012. But for those who remain, waiting is difficult. Trucks and buses used to set out from the camp on a five-day journey to Liberia. Now the cars are just sitting. Robert McIntosh, the secretary of the local Ghana Private Roads Transport Union, says the closed borders mean traders are losing money.
Now, as you can see, things are not the way it should be, because whenever cars are going from here, the place is packed. People are moving up and down. People are patronizing the business, moving in and out, but now it's not happening again. And we are actually worried about the situation of the customer who have kept the goods here for almost 3 months to 4 months. There's no way out for them. The goods are being packed in our trucks. The warehouse is full.
The news from home is frequently grim for those living in the camp. Ebola killed six of Peter Kaba's relatives in Liberia, five of whom died over the course of just a month.
I was called from Liberia that my older sister died from a sickness. But after the burial of my older sister, the older daughter of her died. From there, the little brother died. The other sister died again. There were five that died on this spot.
With borders closed and jobs scarce, many of the Liberians in the camp can only hope for conditions to improve before traveling back home. Chris Stein for VOA News, Bujumbura.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 30th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The smooth transfer of power to Zambian Vice President Guy Scott following the death of President Michael Sata on Tuesday is a sign of democracy and political maturity, according to Ruben Lefuka, head of Transparency International in Zambia. This is not the first time that Zambians have had to deal with the death of a president. In 2008, then-President Levi Mwanawasa died at the age of 59 following a stroke. Lefuka tells reporter Peter Clotty that Zambians are still in shock following the death announcement of President Sata, who had traveled to London to seek medical treatment.
A bit of shock has settled in that this is happening for a second time after having lost President Levi Mwanawasa a few years ago. So Zambians are definitely taking this very strongly. It is something that has happened again, and they feel for the first family, and they feel for his children and all the others that have been supportive of the president during his illness the last couple of months.
People are expressing concern about possible stability since there appear to be some factions within the ruling party, although the transition was smooth. How stable do you anticipate Zambia to be ahead of the 90-day period to organize a fresh presidential election?
Well, it is true that in the last couple of months, we've seen factions emerging within the ruling party. The first test or the first hurdle has been passed by the ruling party in that they've managed pretty smoothly to have the vice president, Dr. Guy Scott, assume office as provided for in the constitution. We don't see any major challenges cropping up in terms of this fight for succession within the ruling party between now and the barrier, the official barrier of the president. It's what happens after that, the period after the barrier to the time that the elections will be held, because then the ruling party has to come up with a candidate. And like in the past with President Mwanawasa, where the vice president, Rupia Banda, became the automatic choice for a successor, it will not be the case because vice president and now entering president, Guy Scott, is not eligible to run for the election given the our constitution.
Some people are saying the smooth transition of choosing a successor, an interim that might be, or short as that might be, shows Zambia's stability, peaceful nature. Do you agree with that assertion?
Yes, it does show the peaceful nature of Zambians, but it also shows the maturity that we are slowly seeing in the way politics is managed in this country. One of the defining characteristics of Zambians when they're faced with tragedy, as the case is at the moment, they tend to unite. And they can go back in history where they lost the entire football team off the coast of Gabon. Political differences were put aside and united to deal with that tragedy. And this was seen when President Mwanawasa passed away. And I see the same spirit even now.
Ruben Lefuka is the head of Transparency International in Zambia. He spoke with reporter Peter Clatter from the capital, Lusaka. Sudan's information minister says President Omar al-Bashir is a man of peace who should have been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for ending one of Africa's longest wars. But instead of praising and encouraging his efforts, Ahmed Bilal says President Bashir is being threatened with arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court, the ICC, for alleged war crimes in Darfur. The comments come as Sudan said this week that President Bashir has brokered a plan for peace talks between Libya's warring factions during a visit to Khartoum by Libya's internationally recognized Prime Minister Abdallah Al-Thani. Information Minister Bilal says the details of the plan will be worked out by Libya's neighbors of Egypt, Algeria, Chad, and Sudan during an upcoming meeting in Khartoum.
We said that the neighbors of Libya, Egypt, Sudan, Chad, and Algeria. We have conducted this all. We have also the relations with the factions inside Libya. If every part uses his own relations and exerts some pressure on those who know them to bring all these factions to a round table, then we can reach peace. We have contacted some of these. They accepted, and now the Prime Minister. Then we will continue. The President will continue his contacts with other parts to bring them all for negotiations very soon.
The Prime Minister also said on Wednesday that he was ready to talk to the factions. Was this part of your plan? And when is he expected to talk to the different groups?
Actually, we did have also contacts with the different groups, and they accepted. But now, with the announced acceptance of the prime minister, I think the environment is conducive for dialogue. And we hope this will bring peace to Libya.
Mr. Minister, Libya accused your government September of bringing arms to one of the factions in Libya. Were you able to talk to the prime minister of Libya, and were you able to convince him that you do not side with anybody?
Definitely, this is actually just an allegation, and we know that, and we have our many enemies which they say about Sudan, things which is not true. On the spot, we said that the aeroplane which went to Tripoli is not siding any part and is not taking any sort of something to any side, just taking some supplies to the joint forces on the border of Libya. We kept continuing and telling the prime minister and his government, and he convinced that this was true. And now our relations with Tobruk government or with the prime minister of Libya is quite in position.
There are all kinds of sanctions that have been put on your government, and your president is there's an arrest warrant from the ICC. Is there something that Sudan wants in return for the peace efforts that it's making?
Let me tell you one thing. Our president is a man of peace, and he stopped the longest war in Africa. Instead of giving him a Nobel Prize, he is being called for the ICC. We don't care about ICC. We do care for the good relations with our neighbors. Sudan, it will be a place for chaos in the whole Africa. And we need assistance, not accusations.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Burkina Faso's National Assembly will debate a referendum today, Thursday, that if passed would allow current President Blaise Compaoré to seek another term. Compaoré, who has been in office for 27 years, has faced massive street protests. Residents and civil society leaders such as rapper Smokey Bambara have come out in the tens of thousands to demand that Mr. Compaoré not seek another term in office in next year's elections. Bambara, a spokesperson for Libérés Citoyens Movement, spoke to Ricky Strike about the group's plans to protest outside the National Assembly today, Thursday.
This law is giving the President Blaise Compaoré 15 years more to be president of Burkina Faso. 3 mandates, exactly. And it's not normal, because this president is in power since 27 years. It's a kind of coup d'état constitutionnel.
There have been protests this week in Ouagadougou. Thousands of people showed up. What is the program for Thursday? Will the protest go on?
They want to vote this law at 10 o'clock. And they even put the deputy on the huddle. So we have to do something. So we're deciding that civil society is going to be there at the United States Nation, trying to put the pressure on deputy. Why they want to spend money, the money of the citizen, to do this fucking referendum? We don't want it. And so we don't want the referendum, and we don't want this law. We just want that the President Compaoré go out as the constitution, the Burkinabe constitution, say.
With the massive amount of people who have come out, do you think that the people in power are listening?
Yeah, I think the President Blaise Compaoré is a liar of it. And he's a military guy also, so he doesn't want to keep the power. But people are very determined. So we're going to see this issue. We are in Bala Sikwa, and we don't want to use force. We don't want to use strength. So we're going to try to do it pacifically. We even did a caravan with motorbikes and cars. We go all around the town and tell people and discussing with people on market place. And tell people to go outside, to come with us and go to this place.
I've seen a lot of photos of women holding spatulas at the protests. What is the significance of the spatula?
So they use it for cooking, so it's a symbol. You know, our masters use this object for cooking to make a paste, African paste, or to. So it's very, very popular, and it's a symbol, a feminine symbol. So in Africa, when a wife take this object and go outside, it's very dangerous. It's meaning that she is very angry, you know. She's very, so much angry that she's using this utensil for something else, for punishing, you know. So it's a big symbol.
That was Smokey Bambara, spokesperson for Liberalized Citoyen Movement. He was speaking to Ricky Shrike from Ouagadougou. It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Awuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with cricket. Uganda beat Bermuda by 7 wickets at the Pepsi ICC World Cricket League Division 3 in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia on Wednesday. As a result, Uganda placed a close second to defending champions Nepal at the conclusion of the round-robin phase of the contest. Consequently, Uganda and Nepal gain promotion to the Division 2 League in Namibia next year. Today, Thursday, Uganda play Nepal in the finals of the contest. This encounter will be preceded by the bronze medal playoff between Singapore and Malaysia, as well as the fifth place playoff between Bermuda and the United States of America. Turning to football, Ivory Coast's reigning Africa Football Player of the Year, Yahya Toure, is a nominee for the FIFA Ballon d'Or Award, FIFA disclosed in Zurich, Switzerland. This is the highest and most prestigious award for a player in football. Nigeria's Peter Dedevo is a nominee for the Women's World Coach Award of the Year. Coach Dedevo guided Nigeria to bag a silver medal at the 2014 FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup in Canada. Unfortunately, no African has been nominated for the FIFA Men's World Coach of the Year or the FIFA Women's Player of the Year awards. In Nigeria, the Nigerian head of state, Goodluck Jonathan, has praised the Nigeria Super Falcons for recapturing the Africa Women's Championship title in Windhoek, Namibia over the weekend. President Jonathan noted that the team's discipline and not just talent and ability was central to the Super Falcons' triumph. The Super Falcons have won the biannual event for an unprecedented 7 out of possible 9 outings. Consequently, President Jonathan and Vice President Namadi Sambo have invited the Super Falcons to State House Abuja for a formal appreciation function next week on Wednesday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Thursday morning comes from Blackstar Deng Bol Deng of Juba, South Sudan. He says, "Dear VOA, I would like to urge the South African government to pressure its security organs to define and clarify to the world why the country's legends are being shot. First, it was Lucky Dube in 2007, and now it is Senzo Meyiwa, captain of the national football team." We thank you, Blackstar Deng Bol Deng of Juba in South Sudan, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The office of Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has confirmed he will run for another term. Spokesman Ruben Abate says in a statement that Mr. Jonathan will pick up his party's nomination form on today, Thursday, for the February 2015 election. South Sudan says the oil town of Bentiu remains under government control, but a main opposition group in the country says that it is not true. The rebel group says it seized control of the town after 3 days of heavy fighting. And Zambian Vice President Guy Scott has been named the country's interim president following the death of President Michael Sata. That's it for this Thursday, October 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa, every Saturday and Sunday at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC.